Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet, every Monday and Thursday evening, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also listen to this on Podomatic and about maybe a dozen other platforms, Spotify, iHeart, and a whole bunch of others. And it's brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And this year's camp is just about full, so you might be able to get a spot if you register quickly. Our website's campconstitution.net. We also run a family retreat. We have speaking engagements on a regular basis, so check our website to look at our calendar and to learn more about us, www.campconstitution.net. Well, I have a couple of one, not really a guest. He's almost a co-host, Reverend Stevie Kraft. Rev, say hello to the millions of listeners.
Everybody, how you doing? Reverend Kraft, Reverend Stevie Kraft, Chappie on the line.
And we have a guest, Dr. Rick Scarborough. He's come all the way from Texas, and we have him here up in the New England area for a few days, and he's quite a blessing. And what I'll, instead of reading his long, impressive credentials, including riding Harleys and playing golf, I'll let Pastor Rick introduce himself. So, Rick, take the floor here.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you two gentlemen today. I'm so delighted to be in New England, where it's nice and cool. It was 102 degrees in Houston when I left, and a pleasant 65 or so here, so invite me back and invite me often. This is refreshing. Good to be with you today.
How about February? Would you go and come back in February?
I would love to, but I'm already booked.
That's when we like to go down to your area, or March and so forth. So the reason why we brought you up here is that Reverend Steve was down in Oklahoma. I think it was Oklahoma or Texas.
Arkansas. Yeah, and Texas. Two different times.
And there was a Black Robe Regiment gathering. And so instead of, again, that I could give you a good definition of the Black Robe Regiment. I've discussed this in the past, but let Pastor Rick tell the listeners, what is the Black Robe Regiment?
Well, the Black Robe Regiment was the most scorned of all of New England during the pre and during the Revolutionary period when this country was founded. Preachers in that day understood their call to civic duty. And since they were basically the best educated in a community, they also were the most active politically. They trained their people to love freedom. They taught them what the Bible teaches about personal responsibility. And consequently, when it came to the tyranny that they were undergoing through the tyrannical edicts being handed down to them as colonists, denying their basic liberties, they prepared their people to fight for their liberties. The Black Robe Regiment, some of the most famous of the lot, were men who went on and served with General George Washington in the actual military. I love the story often told and perhaps repeated on this broadcast. I feel doubtless about John Peter Muhlenberger, who pastored a wonderful church in Virginia. He was a member of the Black Robe Regiment. And as things got heated after the firing at Concord and Lexington, and all the story and history that you know in this wonderful genesis of the Revolution, he stood before his people on a given Sunday and preached from that blessed third chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes. He said to them, among other things, there's a time for peace and a time for war. And then he went on to say to his congregation of more than 300 men plus families, the time for war has come. And at a dramatic moment in the sermon, to the shock of his parishioners, he unzipped his black clerical robe and unveiled the uniform of a colonel in the Continental Army. He called his men to follow him to battle, and that day about 300 men followed him off. There's a wonderful scene in the movie The Patriot that personifies this or tells this story. In wonderful movie fashion. But in that dramatic scene, 300 or so men rode off to join General George Washington. His brother, Augustus Muhlenberg, who pastored a church in New York, was in absolute shock. And I don't want to tell too much of this story. If you want to tell me to stop,
it's a good
I will.
Story, please.
I've repeated it so many times. I know it as a part of my own life. But Augustus was infuriated that his brother would leave the the important role of pastor to fight in a war. But when the British troops marched through New York, burned down Augustus's church, he had a change of heart. He'd also joined the military. He became the first Speaker of the House, right. Joined his brother in serving after the war as members of the leadership of our newly formed government. But that's what the Black Robe Regiment is. It's preachers who understand the times, like the sons of Issachar understood the times during the Old Testament era, and know what it is that men must do. This is the time for God's men, his church, his clergy, to recognize the role we have in leading our people to understand what liberty is about and the price of liberty, and calling our parishioners to understand the truth of the Bible as it relates to civic duty. That's what I do. That's who I am. And we're now reforming the Black Robe Regiment across this country, finding that that small but important percentage of pastors who get it and empowering them. That's what I'm doing in New England, and I'm proud to serve alongside my good friend Hal and also the Reverend, who are two members of the Black Robe Regiment themselves.
You told an excellent story last night. That would have been Sunday night here in Lexington, in Texas, how you were involved in getting a couple of thousand pastors taking a stand for righteousness, and it made a profound impact in the political arena. Can you tell that story?
I'm happy to. As I was pastoring a church on the southeast side of Houston, I ran into a horrifically evil high school assembly. And as a result of that, I informed our people in a congregation of about 3,000 why we should get involved right there in that suburb of Houston called Pearland, Texas. It wasn't long until we owned the city council and the school board because our people got involved. Well, a medical doctor across the state heard of what we'd done in that relatively small and obscure part of Houston. He called me over to San Antonio and sat me down and said, "Preacher, what would it cost to do that in Texas, to take your movement and expand it across the entire state?" Well, frankly, I was a novice. I had no idea what that would cost. So I met with some politicos that were Christians that I knew well, one in particular that I had been close friends with for a number of years, who's now serving on my board, I might add. But we put out a budget of $1.2 million to mobilize a minimum of 2,000 preachers across Texas. That budget was so we could hold luncheons and dinners across the state, teach them what it means to be a true patriot as a preacher. Well, the result of that was we galvanized 2,000 preachers in 2002 in that election cycle. Those 2,000 preachers joined us in a statewide voter registration drive among the evangelical churches of Texas, resulting in the largest uptick in conservative votes in the history of Texas until that time. And that is the year historically that Texas went from blue to red. That wasn't our objective. Our objective was to get conservative people elected to every statewide office, as well as both houses of the state legislature. We didn't care if they were Republican or Democrat. We wanted followers of Jesus. We wanted people committed to conservative principle. But the political outcome was the state went from blue to red and has remained red ever since. Every statewide office holder for the first time since Reconstruction was pro-life and pro-family. That was the year that we saw a dramatic change in the whole temperature of our state, and we've become a model state for conservatism ever since.
In spite of all the illegal aliens that have been flooding your beleaguered state. One of the things that when we had our flag lawsuit that we won 9-0 at the U.S. Supreme Court, we had some detractors who weren't on the left, but they were fellow Christians. And they were telling me that we had no business doing this. There's nothing in the Bible that you should get involved in government. And it's just amazing how little many Christians know about the Bible and about citizenship. Could you share some verses? I think the Apostle Paul.
Well,
when the Apostle Paul, he was a Roman citizen, and he had to pay for that. You know, he wasn't born a Roman citizen, but he appealed to Caesar because as a Roman citizen, do that. So, if you could share some verses in both Olden and Rev, you can add. Please add in where it really discusses that. I mean, I think the Bible is full of God's hand in government.
Well, I would say to all of you preachers out there, get your pen out. I'll give you a sermon for Sunday morning. You know, when Paul and Silas, gentlemen, went to Philippi, they went under a mission of God. You recall that God gave that Macedonian call. I used to preach a revival sermon entitled The Revival That Broke Out at Midnight. Well, Paul received this vision. He was called to go to the chief province or the chief city in all the province of Macedonia, which happened to be Philippi. When he arrived, clearly he wasn't politically driven. He was there to reach souls. So what I say to preachers is, I never want you to be politically driven. Be a man committed to reaching souls. But secondly, as soon as he got there, he ran into this controversy. He met a young lady who was a fortune teller, at least so she was called a fortune teller. You know, there were some businessmen there in town that were making a fortune off of her. And in the meantime, she was being destroyed spiritually. But Paul and Silas revealed not only were not politically driven, they weren't politically correct. They didn't call her a fortune teller. They said, you're demon possessed. Well, because of their stance with the gospel, she was set free. The greatest thing that ever happened to that young lady was meeting Jesus. But it was the worst thing that could happen to these enterprising businessmen. It's kind of like shutting down the abortion industry. We're hated for standing for life because people are making millions of dollars off of killing babies and selling their body parts. And that's the real issue. That's what drives that cultural confrontation we're engaged in right now. They weren't politically driven. They weren't politically correct. We find they weren't politically connected either. They were drug out in the middle of the street and beaten within an inch of their life for doing the right thing. And now we find them thrown in jail. And there we find that they weren't politically dependent. Instead of calling for a lawyer, they called on God. And you know the rest of the story. In the middle of the night, as they were praying and praising, even though their backs were lacerated by the whip and the cat of nine tails, they're rejoicing because they've been called to suffer on behalf of Christ's sake. And suddenly there's an earthquake, shakes the entire town. Then the jail cells all burst open, and that prison keeper, assuming they were all released, did the only thing he could do to save his family. And that's to set it up where he would basically commit suicide, but it looked like he was murdered. Therefore, his family would get the pension, and he wouldn't humiliate his family for losing the prisoners. But just before he thrust himself on his own spear, the Bible says Paul called from the inner sanctuary of that jail and said, "Do thyself no harm. We are all here." And to his shock, the jailer burst into their cell. He looked around and no one had left their cell. They were spellbound by this dramatic act of God. The Bible says that having secured the prisoners, he took Paul and Silas into his own home, washed their wounds, and his whole household got saved. But now we find out that Paul and Silas were not politically driven, who were not politically connected, were not politically dependent, nor are they politically ignorant either. They got word from the magistrates, who now had an epiphany. They realized that what they'd done was wrong. And so they did what elected officials often do. They tried to sweep the controversy under the rug. Just let them go free and no one will ever know.
Nothing changes.
Telling you, Satan has no new ideas, guys. He just recycles the old ideas.
With some new technology.
And so here we are, Paul and Silas, they're given their freedom. But unlike a lot of Baptist preachers I know, that's who I run with mostly, they didn't get up a tent, go down the highway and talk about the marvelous thing God had done in Philippi. Rather, they risked their life and they said, you know, we're going nowhere. We are Roman citizens. We have rights just like you, and our rights have been denied. You tell the magistrates to get themselves down here and let's address the grievance I have. Paul and Silas recognized, particularly Paul, that his rights as a Roman citizen had been secured by the blood of thousands of Roman soldiers, and they weren't to be lightly discarded. And so standing on his constitutional rights, he demanded redress for his grievance, just like you've done in the courts of law, and been rewarded for it. And just like every believer out there listening who are hiding and cringing in their closets should understand, We are American citizens. We have a dual citizenship. Mm-hmm. We have a citizenship in heaven, just like mm-hmm. Paul and Silas, that we cherish the most. Mm-hmm. And if they take our life, instant death is instant glory. Mm-hmm. But if we stand on our citizenship rights and demand mm-hmm. they redress, our grievances are redressed, mm-hmm. who knows but what we get our country back. Mm-hmm. Those magistrates, upon hearing that Paul and Silas were also Roman citizens, marched themselves down there and said, how do we right this wrong? Here's what Paul said. You let us stay in the city and strengthen that new church that's been born here, and we'll leave when we get good and ready. Mm. And arguably the most powerful and strongest church in the New Testament was built right there in Philippi out of that controversy. Mm. It was the only church that stood with Paul all the way to Rome. They sent him contributions and stood with him when everybody else turned away. Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, the Bible is full of stories like this. Mm-hmm. We have been called as Christians, and as particularly as American Christians, mm-hmm. with freedoms unlike any the world has ever known, mm-hmm. to stand up and stand on our American citizenship to advance the gospel, mm-hmm. which means no retreat and no surrender.
Mm. When I think Juneteenth, mm-hmm. just yesterday, and I think of all of the Christians who were involved in the abolitionist movement, and it brings me to William Wilberforce, who mm-hmm. was the one that he was a member of Paul. He had a beautiful singing voice, and he wanted to have a ministry to sing at churches. And he said, "No, you need to run for office." He was a mm-hmm. member of Parliament, and they told him, "Keep your religion out of politics." Mm-hmm. And if it weren't for what he did, the slavery would not have ended in Great Britain.
And a preacher.
And on a preacher.
Back
a
in
preacher.
The background.
That's right.
John Newton,
mm-hmm. who wrote Amazing saying, Grace.
Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. Stay with it.
Stay
Don't
with it.
Back down.
Don't mm-hmm. back down. It took a while. And I think many Christians, mm-hmm. they'll tell me, they'll get involved in some campaign, whether it be a political campaign or maybe a pro-life or whatever issue it is. And they'll say, "Oh, gee, I'm burned out." Burned out? What do you mean burned out? You went to a couple of meetings, you passed out a few pamphlets, you wrote one letter to the newspaper, and you're burned out? I said, this is a lifetime endeavor. Mm-hmm. God calls us to battle. He doesn't say the victory is his. And one of my goals is to see the United States pull out of the UN, and I'd like to see compulsory education laws all repealed. That may not happen in my lifetime, but that's okay, because I'm hoping to set the groundwork when it will exactly. happen.
And let me say this, Hal. What I just gave was the outline of a booklet that I've written called Mixing Church and State, mm-hmm. God's Way. Mm-hmm. Anyone who makes a contribution to your ministry as a result of this broadcast, I will send them that book free. You mm-hmm. just get their names and their information, and that's my donation to your cause today.
Well, folks, you hear that. If you want to make a donation, you can go to our website, campconstitution.net, and we have a PayPal account, and you can also just... you see the address where you contact us is an address where you can send a donation. Mm. We'll greatly appreciate it.
And I'll forward them that book free. I'll give it to you to give to them.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, you've authored a number of books, mm-hmm. and you have some here on the tour. Can you maybe talk about a few of them?
Mm-hmm. Well, my signature book is called Enough is Enough. Mm-hmm. I actually wrote it in 1996. Jerry Falwell created Liberty House Publishing to publish that book. He actually only published two books, and that was one of them, before he shut that down. But then in 2008, Charisma Magazine, mm-hmm. The owner of that, Steve Strang, who's a good friend of mine, asked me if I'd rewrite the book, and in fact paid me a substantial contract to rewrite the current edition, mm-hmm. which was upgraded in 2008. So Enough is Enough mm-hmm. is my signature work. I most recently wrote a book entitled Mighty Men Stay on Track. Mm. My daughter was, she had aspirations of being an Olympian, was well on her way when God called her home at age 25, unfortunately. But I wrote a book to commemorate her life mm-hmm. around track and field events. But really what it is it's a book about discipling men. Mm. Because what I do is I take 12 disciplines in track and field and use them as springboards to teach spiritual truths on how to become a mighty man after the ilk of the sons mm-hmm. of Issachar. Mm-hmm. David surrounded himself with mighty men, mm-hmm. and I've devoted the remaining part to taking all of I've learned and pouring it into other men who will then in turn teach other men mm-hmm. so that we keep this this hope of freedom alive in America, because it requires mighty men standing on principle, as the two of you have devoted your lives, if we're going to save America.
What do you tell the pastors who are reluctant to get involved? They're afraid of maybe losing members of their church. Maybe that large contributor has a homosexual child and he'll be offended if you preach what God's word. What is your message to those pastors who may agree with us, but are just afraid to come out?
I say to them, remember the former days. And after you were first called to this work, you endured a great fight of affliction, partly while you're made a gazing stock and partly while you became companions of those who were so used. What I find happens is no one gets in the ministry for the money. I mean, those who are truly called fell in love with Jesus, typically early in life, and it was so overwhelming, it's all they could do. Money never entered the picture. But, you know, they take a couple of stands early in ministry and get fired for it, or they get confronted. They look around and they see the guys that compromise, keep their church and have a comfy life.
Have their own private plane, their own boat, maybe.
And after about two or three dismissals, their kids are now approaching high school. The wife comes along and says, man, how can we move again at this stage of their life? It's just not fair to the kids. And so a man then begins to weigh the options and he compromises. What I say to them is, I'm giving you a fresh opportunity to return to your first love. Draw the line in the sand and say, compromise no more. Because if you compromise, you fail. You're now a hireling. You're no longer a called man.
You use that term a lot, hireling.
Return to your first love. That's what we all have to do.
That's good.
And you had several other books as well.
I have a book that's no longer in print, but I'll tell you what. I addressed in 2006 a book entitled Liberalism Kills Kids. And one of the chapters was on the rise of pedophilia. And I predicted in that book that we would be fighting that as the next battlefront. Well, that's where we are. And so I have a podcast I released this week. It's the first of three, entitled The Rise of Pedophilia. You can go to our website or you can go to any of the major carriers for podcasts. That you mentioned several of them at the start of this program, but it's called Rick Scarborough, Mixing Church and State God's Way, and it's on pedophilia. We are living now where the next great battlefront is stopping the rise of adults having sex with children. Here in the press and the news just in the last couple of weeks, we all were horrified to see a drag queen story time and drag queens now being embraced in the White House.
That's right.
No less than our Speaker of the House, third from the President, celebrating pedophilia. And that's all drag queen activities are. So this is the next great battlefield.
This is a vital topic in this so-called gay pride month. Back in the 80s, a friend of mine, a former landlord, gave me a copy of Jerry Falwell's monthly publication?
He put out a newspaper.
Yeah, a newspaper. And in the paper, there was a so-called poem that was originally published in a homosexual newspaper in Boston. It was called We Will Sodomize Your Sons. And I read this. And I couldn't believe it. I said, no, this can't be true. I actually called the newspaper. I'll never forget that it was Gay Community News, GNC. And I said, did you folks publish this poem by Michael Swift, We Will Sodomize Your Sons? And he was almost reluctant. He says, well, yes, we did. He's a gay poet from Connecticut. He was late stages of dementia. Well. So he verified that. And it was supposed to be just parody, you know, like it's angry homosexual, just taking it up. He didn't really mean anything in it. Well,
yes,
it was,
he did.
I know he did. It was entered into the congressional record by Congressman Dannemeyer in California. And if you look at it, it said, we're going to take over the sports. We're going to take wherever men and boys congregate. We're going to get them. And there's nothing you do about it. You weak heteros. That has almost been accomplished. And we used to talk about the homosexual agenda. And even conservatives, some would say, oh, there's no such thing. I don't think they're laughing about it, scoffing about it now. Because and once they accepted, I remember back in the early 70s, I'm 63, I was still a young teenager, who had been accosted by homosexual men on several occasions.
He's still a young teenager.
And the narrative then was what two consenting adults do in the privacy of their own bedroom is nobody's business. And my take was, well, all right, but I don't have to pay for the consequences of that behavior behind your closed doors. So now just leave us alone. Let us do our thing until we have our whole month. We have corporate America pushing it. We're pushing it in kindergarten. So it's come full circle. So what should what do you recommend that Christians do to counter this?
Well, in the first place, this idea that we have should have no business commenting on what people do in the privacy of their bedroom. Jesus didn't take that position when the woman at the well, the woman was brought to him and thrown at his feet, who'd been caught in the act of adultery. He took an interest in what she'd been doing in the privacy of her bedroom, but he forgave her. He said, go and sin no more. He told those who were accusing her and attacking her, if they were without sin, they could cast the first stone. But he did take an interest, and we should as well, because what is done in the privacy of the bedroom has human consequences that are far-reaching. A lot of the insidious diseases connected to all of these, both heterosexual and homosexual sex activities, have lifelong consequences. But more importantly, the Christian just simply has to draw a line in the sand, and it's the line is drawn for us in Romans 1. Some things are right. Some things are wrong, no matter who does it. And the Christian's role is to hold up the standard so the Holy Spirit can do the convicting.
Amen.
And then we can be the ministers of reconciliation.
Come on.
We don't hate these people. We love them. We want the best for them. But we know that if they continue in the lifestyle, it will ultimately kill them and destroy those they love.
And so it's called tough love.
That's exactly a perfect term. Yeah,
tough love. Anyway, well, we only have about a minute and a half left. Where can the listener, I say viewers because I do a TV program, a video program too, so I have to compartmentalize, but where can the viewers learn more about your important ministry?
RecoverAmerica.com is our website, and there's a lot of information there, including our podcast, a lot of things that I've written. We do a newsletter that comes out about every 8 to 10 days. Would love to connect with many of your listeners because they're of the same heart. And I simply commend what you are doing up here. This is a wonderful testimony in this birthplace of freedom that God's people are still alive and active. But again, our website is recoveramerica.com. Would love to hear from you.
All right, Rev, we got about a minute and a half. What do you want to add?
And not in a whole lot I have to add to that one. But I just got a revelation of what Doc just said about the privacy of your own bedroom argument. I never thought about it that way, but he's absolutely correct. Right. Jesus definitely did take a stand on that. Matter of fact, Doc just gave me a sermon on that right out of John chapter 8. You know, has anyone condemned you? No one, Lord. Neither do I condemn you. Now go and stop sinning.
But go and sin no more.
Right. Well, exactly. So I'm glad Doc shared that with our listening audience, because that is a crucial point. We hear that argument all the time. Well, it's none of my business what people do in their own bedroom. And that's the first time I heard that type of exposition. No, you know, Jesus would never take that position, number one. And number two, sin is a little leaven. Just a little leaven. A little leaven. Leaven's the whole lump. Because years ago, back in the day, that was the argument that homosexuals used. But as a result, now we got a hot mess.
All right. Well, Rev, thank you. And you have Christian Citizenship Ministry.
Yes.
As your website, as well as campconstitution.net.
Right.
Well, thanks for listening. But we could go on for hours. This is just getting warmed up. This is the fastest 30 minutes in radio. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. And until next week, may God richly bless you.